Oh, that's right. It's trash to treasures, but I found a real treasure out in the parking lot. Jim Bohannon, he's here with us this morning. Jim Bohannon, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Ann. I was just wandering around aimlessly, and I looked up, and suddenly here I was at Sharp Facets, which is a place, by the way, that everybody in Greenwood ought to go to. Wonderful selection of merchandise here, and I figured, well, why don't we just walk in, and lo and behold, there were Ann and Jeff right here, and the whole staff.
Yep,
and just Gracie the Wonder Dog, and I said, well, I should probably drop in and just horn my way into the studio, and because if I see a microphone, I'm there.
Well, like any good broadcaster, absolutely. So how have you been doing?
I've been doing well. I wish they could space out the stories a little bit. We were talking before we went on about what we need is a Federal Bureau of Scheduling Scandals.
Yes.
For, among other things. It would hire a few more bureaucrats, and we don't have nearly enough federal employees.
No, we don't.
But beyond that, of course, it would space it out, so you wouldn't go for months without a really good story. Then all of a sudden, look at what we haven't talked about lately.
Exactly.
The Cleveland kidnappings?
Yes.
The Sarnaev brothers?
Yes.
Boston. Tamerlan and Jokar. We haven't talked much about Syria of late. North Korea did manage a little temper tantrum to get back into the headlines. And, of course, immigration reform and gun control. Boy, it all seems like last year. You know, we're all off on Internal Revenue and Benghazi and the Associated Press, which are wonderful stories. But as I say, we need to space this out.
I know you're right, but you know, when it comes to the federal government, it just seems like it's a dike and like they're poking all these holes in it. I'm worried about what's going to happen here.
Oh,
think anything?
It's interesting to see what which of these stories has legs. There are some serious, frankly, abuses here, constitutional abuses. The Associated Press stories probably had the least public attraction or traction, but. I do believe that that's a clear violation of the First Amendment. The Internal Revenue story has not only a great deal of public traction, because we all fear Internal Revenue and loathe it, even though they do have a job that needs to be done. But on top of that, you had a clear violation of constitutional rights here with the story that revolves around that. And then, of course, the only story in which people actually died. Four Americans dead after what happened or did not happen in Benghazi. And through it all, of course, it rarely is the actual wrongdoing that gets an administration in trouble. It tends to be the cover-up. And I will say this, the president said the right words initially about the tax situation, but his subordinates are not saying the right words. I don't know. I don't remember. I didn't have time to make a statement prepared. They're saying all the wrong things. And it's almost as if somebody in his administration has decided, let's look as bad as we can, both as crooked as we can and as stupid as we can. I don't know what's going on there. I cannot believe, if you're sending people up to Capitol Hill on something like this, that you don't rehearse them, don't have a written statement. I brought three writers with me. Write a statement, boys. They'll be ready for you in 5 minutes. We'll practice it. You'll say it several times. Then we're going to fire questions at you, just like the members of Congress will, and we're going to record that, tape it, play it back, and we'll go over it, and we will make sure that you are as ready and as polished as you can be. Instead, they send these clowns up there who are as unready as they could possibly be. I don't get it.
I don't get it.
From his point of view, I don't care whether the president knew nothing and this was happening behind his back, or he was up to his eyebrows in trying to get these conservative groups. Either way, this is not the way you manage this kind of crisis. It's just dumb. I mean, even beyond the unconstitutionality of it is the stupidity. Mr. President, if you're going to be a crook, I expect you to be a smart crook.
Smart crook. There you go. You know, and what do you think? Do you think this is going to derail Obamacare, at least put it back a bit? Because that, of course, the IRS was supposed to monitor all this.
Well, of course, one thing that I think we have tended to overlook, the Republicans already have the power to totally destroy Obamacare. All revenue bills must originate in the House of Representatives, says so in the Constitution. So all the funding has to go through a Republican-controlled body. All you do is starve it off. They have not done that yet. But if you want to talk about repeal, clearly the president will veto any effort at repeal, even if Republicans capture the Senate in 2014, which is a real possibility. It's not likely the Republicans will have a veto-proof majority, two-thirds in each House. So the president will be vetoing any repeal of what he considers his signature domestic program before January 20th of 2017.
Absolutely.
But if you get a Republican president, then it could be repealed.
But I just think that it probably, you know, there's a lot of concern about the IRS actually having all our private information. Now we're getting into healthcare with information with the IRS.
And furthermore, a person who has already demonstrated her willingness to trash people's rights has been promoted for her good job to run that aspect of the Internal Revenue Service, along with the 100,000 plus in bonuses that she was given on top of her $170,000 a year salary that she's been barely managing to eke by on. I mean, you're right. From a public relations standpoint, this is just disastrous for the administration.
Absolutely. And, you know, not only that, how about going out and going towards going to insurance companies and getting them to ante up to put some money together to help out to tell the public that Obamacare is a good thing?
Well, the insurance companies, of course, if you're stuck with the program, and the insurance companies are still not happy with Obamacare. But as long as it is a fact of life, and it will be a fact of life now until, as I said, at a minimum, January 20th of 2017, the insurance companies almost have to see to it that as many people as possible get signed up so that you can get more premiums coming in. Because who will sign up immediately for something like this? The sick, the old, the people who mean all kinds of payments going out, not so many premiums coming in. As long as the insurance companies are stuck with this, it is important to get as many people signed up as possible paying premiums who won't be making claims. Otherwise, it'll be an economic disaster for them. That's why they're cooperating. They have no choice.
They have no choice. But really, is a federal government office supposed to collect money for their to help promote a project?
Well,
that's a sticky
you're
question.
Getting into arcane, arcane matters. I mean, the federal government does a lot of things that it does not have anything that I think is a reasonable constitutional basis for doing. So my short answer would be no, but...
No, but.
But they're doing it, and no one is stopping them. So I guess until someone stops them, yeah, they've got that power.
Yeah. But, you know, there are so many issues out there. The Benghazi one, though, is the one that just tears at your heart.
It does. It tears at your heart, Anne, and for a very good reason. Obviously, four Americans died. It is now abundantly clear not only that we did not try to do the most that we could do. It's irrelevant whether or not rescue forces could have gotten there in time. Probably the ambassador was dead, regardless. Mm-hmm. The others, some of them, where the fighting went on for hours, almost certainly could have been saved. And it is abundantly clear now that this was a narrative that was made up out of whole cloth that the administration did know, despite lies to the contrary by, among other people, Secretary of State and Democratic presidential nominee presumptive Hillary Clinton, that they were told it was not a spontaneous demonstration. Hey, there's a demonstration going on involving that awful video. Hey, wait a minute. Don't go yet. I got to grab my rocket-propelled grenade launcher. Wouldn't go to a demonstration without that. Nothing spontaneous about it. And we, if they were smart on Benghazi, they would simply fire a bunch of people and, if necessary, trash Hillary. I can't believe that would frankly break Obama's heart. They have worked together reasonably well, but there's never been any love lost twixt the Clintons and the Obamas. So the Clintons have always felt that it was Hillary's right to be president, and the Obamas got in the way of that. And it wouldn't bother him, I think, to trash her at this juncture. But doing nothing like this
just angers everybody.
It angers a lot of people that shouldn't be angered.
Right.
I mean, they are going out of their way, the Obama administration, to find enemies that they don't need. And the idea, for example, okay, it now appears what the political motive was. Obama had large, this was before the election, remember, Obama had sold himself on an issue where Democrats have traditionally been weak, national security. Obama, he killed bin Laden and weakened al-Qaeda. Well, Obama did in fact kill Osama. Osama didn't come back to life, but al-Qaeda, well, weakened, was not dead. Frankly, they could have said, okay, it was an attack. And they could have spun a narrative this way. This is me spinning for the Obama administration. Yes, there was an attack. There will be more attacks. You cannot simply wipe out an organization as pervasive as al-Qaeda overnight. But nonetheless, the record is still quite good. We've not had another domestic attack on American soil, which at the time was true before the Boston Marathon attack. And so my narrative is still correct. Bin Laden is dead. And al-Qaeda is still weak. Not dead, but still weak. In other words, you could have still had your story for the American public, and you wouldn't have to have made up all this
you
stuff.
Could have
he borrowed trouble that did not need to be borrowed.
So, he could have had his cake and eaten it, too.
He could have, and they've been barking up the wrong tree.
They've been barking, and so is Gracie. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right, we're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Jim Bohannon is in the building.
Got to come on by. I'd be happy to say hello to anybody. But great stock of merchandise, wonderful items, things here you will never see at another jewelry store, I might add.
And you're from up there in Washington, D.C. You have lots of choices up there.
We do, but we got my wife's new wedding ring right here at Sharp Facets. Got a great deal,
yeah.
Wonderful quality item, and I was very pleased.
Absolutely.
So you ought to come on over because, you know, look at this. It's all cloudy out. It's not a great day for going to the park or anything like that. You might as well come on over and check what we got here.
Absolutely. So, Jim, you know, I like your Bureau of Scheduling Scandals, but there has been so many things going on. It's hard to figure out which one is the more important.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. From the standpoint of the three major scandals of the moment, we'll put Fast and Furious on the back burner, although it is still there.
Right.
But we haven't talked about it lately. But these three hit us all at once. Internal Revenue, Benghazi, and the Associated Press phone records. Of the three, from the standpoint of public interest, I think clearly Internal Revenue is at the top. We all fear and hate IRS. Right behind it, because of the deaths that were, at least in some cases, unnecessary. They didn't have to happen. Benghazi. Way down the list, because the public really doesn't like the media that much anyway, would be the Associated Press. Now, from the standpoint of seriousness of the offenses, Internal Revenue has got to be at the top. Egregious and deliberate violation, no matter what the clowns had to say at the hearings. Right behind that, Benghazi, and dereliction of duty and not doing what could be done to help them. But the Associated Press story is right up there as well. Again, a clear violation of the First Amendment. And I do have to ask myself why it was necessary for the administration to make enemies out of the mainstream media.
Which benefit? Has been so supportive.
Well, at least compliant, pliable, not particularly confrontational, and now very willing to stick it to poor Jay Carney. Isn't that a great name, by the way? You look up Carney in the dictionary, you know, employee of a carnival often considered to be of disreputable character.
You are absolutely right.
I mean, this guy was born to be the spokesman for the Obama White House. He is a carny, right from the word go.
Yeah, he's tap dancing as fast as he can.
It's interesting to note the responses that the administration has taken to these scandals, too, Anne. In terms of Internal Revenue, the president, oh, terrible thing, horrible, terrible. And they've tried a lot of deflection, and people who don't know nothing, no how, no way. Then you go over to the Benghazi case. Well, we just didn't know what we knew when we knew it, kind of thing. It's rather confusing response there. And then you get over to the Associated Press, and Eric Holder has been pretty defiant. By golly, we had leaks. Okay, leaks can be a problem, regardless of whether the Yemeni terror plot should have been put out for public dissemination or not. You don't do it by violating the First Amendment. If you really feel the need to plug leaks, then plug leaks from within. But only on that one has the administration forthrightly defended what happened. On the other two, they have not.
So, yes. Well, that's a lot that's in the news. And, of course, the Boston Marathon, that's kind of dropped out.
It has dropped out, although we're now learning more. There have been reports now that Jokar Tsarnaev, the surviving brother, left a note inside that boat where he was hiding when he was finally captured, and that the note basically was something simple-minded along the lines of, you were in Iraq and Afghanistan. If you kill one Muslim, then you attack us all, ignoring the fact that, of course, it was in Afghanistan, for example, that there were Muslims who were harboring and financing and providing training areas for the people who attacked the World Trade Center. But if you're really simple-minded, which obviously these two were not exactly rocket scientists, there has been that story. Of course, you had the three friends of Jokar, the younger, who covered up for him, and they're now in serious trouble. But there have been other terror stories that have come out of late in Montana. There was another one in another place that escapes my mind immediately. All of them with Islamic connections. And I'm no Islamophobe, and most Muslims are productive, benign members of society. But a disproportionately high percentage of them are a cancer on the world body politic. And I'll tell you very frankly, if there were, oh, let's say 10% of Christians, 10% of Christians, since that's roughly the percentage of Islamic terrorists that we think are out there, or people who follow the fundamentalist Islamic view, if 10% of Christians were out there attacking mosques, flying planes into the holy cities of Medina and Mecca in Saudi Arabia, and generally behaving like terrorists, it wouldn't, I could very well not be complaining about, let's say, being profiled as a Christian, say, to get on an airplane. I might not be happy about it, but I wouldn't be mad at the TSA. I'd be mad at these clowns who pretend that they're Christians. I would be turning them in right and left. And let's say that somebody stood up in a Christian church, a Baptist church, Methodist, whatever, and started preaching this kind of hatred. Are you kidding me? The audience would be out the door, the congregation, before the sermon was over. And they would have this clown fired, and they would probably turn him into the police, which is what a good citizen does. And I haven't seen a lot of that from the Islamic community.
No.
Not enough of it.
Not enough of
not
it.
Not enough of it.
You're absolutely right.
When you have a cancer, you remove it surgically. Cancer doesn't tend to just go away on its own, and this type does not.
It does not. And, you know, I think we just got a little bit too relaxed, don't you?
Well, we always do. I mean, I knew the minute that 9/11 happened and we were all rallying together, and I said, you just wait. I said, we have such a short attention span, the gross national attention span. And sure enough, when you had the Boston Marathon bombing, I remember one person that day, he was one of the stunned eyewitnesses, and he was saying, but it's like we're at war or something. Well, you cretin, yes, we are at war. My gosh, this guy would have to stay up all night to cram to get a third digit on his IQ. Yes, we're at war, you idiot. What the heck does it take?
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't understand these people, but that's the way we are in this country. We have a tendency to get into wish think. I don't want something to be a certain way, so I'm going to pretend it isn't. I want everybody in the world to be reasonable. I'm going to pretend that they are. Well, I agree with them on the want part. I want that. But I'm going to play the hand that's dealt us, and we have been dealt a lot of very malignant individuals and movements on this planet, and I'm going to deal with them, not pretend that they aren't there.
Don't you think some of that comes actually from the top? We don't want to say that this is what we need to do and this is where we are. We want to make sure we're being fair and balanced with everybody.
Well, the president, of course, has from the moment he took office and embarked on his world apology tour. Oh, the United States, we're so terrible. We'll try to be better. We want you to like us. You know, I honestly, if they like us, that's fine. I want them to respect us. Yeah. I want the whole world to respect us. If they like us, that's an added bonus, but it's not necessary.
You know, what was that phrase, carry a big stick and walk softly?
That's what I said, I think. Yeah, it was Teddy Roosevelt who said speak softly and carry a big stick.
Speak softly, yeah, okay.
And this administration apparently has been speaking loudly and carrying no stick at all.
There you go. All right, we are here with the one and only Jim Bohannon right here on WCRS. When we come back after we hear a clip from the I Love Ann show, we will be talking some more with him. So don't you go away. Hey, you got a question or a comment? Don't hesitate to pick up that phone, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back. Do you listen to the I Love Ann show? Well, if you do, you probably heard this one. But if not, maybe you should tune in. Here's a clip from the I Love Ann show every day right here on WCRS. To the wire here. But before we talk about any graduations and before we talk about anything else, how about Candace Glover?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, she is the new American Idol right here from South Carolina. You go, Candace!
And may everybody in our state buy her CD the minute she has her first one out.
Exactly. Yeah, Rhythm and Blues.
So thrilled.
Yes, I tell you what. Now, she's a big girl.
And
she's
deserves it.
Yeah. But
she deserves
it. It says that I didn't get to see it last night, but that she did. She was stunned. She didn't even think they'd called her name. I guess in her mind, she was so sure she'd be the runner-up that when they announced her name, she just kind of stood there. But
phenomenal. She could be the next Aretha Franklin.
She could. But you know, that
I
just
love her voice.
You know what? That just shows you. Talent comes from all over. And, you know, of course, that's the premise. You know, we were talking about the lottery, right? Somebody's going to win Saturday night. But American Idol, that is what it's all about. People that just maybe wouldn't have had the chance get out there and have a chance. And, you know,
more and more states are even doing this.
Sure. Yeah. In fact, Saturday night, they're having a talent show over there in Ware Shoals. So who knows? That could be the start of something.
It could.
So, I guess we all have talents, right? It's just finding them sometimes. That's the problem.
Well, I think singing is such a gift.
It is.
Such a gift.
Kudos to you, Candace, and looking forward, of course, to following your career. And, we might be able to get Candace on the radio with us.
We should. Before she gets any bigger.
That's right. That's what I was thinking. We'll be on that one, right here on WCRS, right here in Greenwood. Well, what would you like to talk about this morning?
Well, we're always talking about names in the news. Sometimes we think it's amazing how something gets used over and over and over, and then there's ones that you can't imagine it being a name. Well, the actress Holly Madison, I think she was one of Hef's girls, has named her little new baby Rainbow Aurora.
Oh, that's pretty.
I'm glad you think so.
That's pretty. Now, what do you call
it? Well, to me, it almost sounds like a star in the sky that's been named or something.
Right.
That's a lot of names.
It is a lot of names, but that is pretty. I thought you were going to give us something totally. I mean, that's bizarro, but that is pretty. So what do you call her, Bo?
No, because now here, you know, I always think about the breakdown.
Right.
Because she's trying to put a lovely name on her child. But what's the child going to end up being called? Rain.
Right.
It'll go in the opposite direction of the lovely sunshine sound of her name to Rain.
Or what was it? Aurora? Was that the second part?
That's
of the
second part.
Yes. Yeah. I think I like Aurora, actually. Aurora would have been just a pretty bad
sound.
Yeah,
that should have been the first part.
Name. Yes. Aurora Rainbow, whatever. Yes. All right.
Rain.
Well, she's Rain. And when the rain comes down, and here she comes again. Yeah, but that is a pretty name. But the unintended consequences of names.
I think you have to think of the breakdown.
Sure, exactly. Weren't you telling me a story about somebody that was getting ready to name their child?
Harpin. Yeah, and I said they didn't think about it being... A woman is often called a harper. She harps.
Right.
And then she's going to be called Harp. Harpin's harping again. Harp.
So what happened? Did they name the child?
Oh, yes, they did. They did.
Even though Mom went to talk to her son about this, right?
Well, either Mom weakened or Son weakened or whatever. But yes, the baby is named.
The baby is named.
Yes.
And so is the fate of that child.
And the family, the poor little child is what, maybe 10 days old?
Right.
A week?
Right.
the whole family is already, you know, kind of yakking it up behind the family.
That was a clip from the I Love Ann Show every day, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10, right here on WCRS 1450 AM. Don't miss it.
Hi, this is Rob Gilchrist, voice of the Emerald Vikings, and I want to tell you about Romac Trophies and Signs. Romac Trophies and Signs maintains specialized service and offers their customers personalized and customized attention. Are you looking for a special way to reward your employees or team? Try a trophy, acrylic award, plaque, or medal. Romac Trophies and Signs adds your company or organization's logo and engrave your award to make it more personal. Visit their huge showroom in the Hampton Place Shopping Center and let Romac Trophies and Signs help you select the perfect gift for retirement or employee recognition. Are you coaching a team and want to recognize your players? Romac Trophies and Signs custom builds trophies on site to fit your budget and your individual needs. Romac is a proud sponsor of WCRS and sponsors the Player of the Week for Emerald Viking football. That's Romac Trophies and Signs at the Hampton Place Shopping Center in Greenwood. Call them today at 864-229-9277.
Oh, that's right. It's a very special Trash to Treasures. I got the treasure right here, Jimbo Hannon, the one and only, right here on WCRS. Of course, you can hear him every weekday night, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. I tell you what, you know, coming to the Peace Center is this ukulele player, you actually interviewed him just within the last couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, Jake Shimabukuro.
You said his name. I'm proud.
I had a lot of practice. I worked on that one. But he, interesting guy, he is a ukulele virtuoso. I mean, he is just, you know, most people just mess with it. In fact, it was once said.
Do you actually take that instrument serious usually?
Well, you know, I mean, it was Will Rogers who once said that that's one of the few instruments where you can't tell if someone is being serious or just messing around with it. But he plays all kinds of stuff. I mean, he plays Bohemian Rhapsody on it. He plays classical pieces like that. He's amazing, and he brought it with him. His ukulele is worth, I think, like $22,000 or something.
Wow.
He let me hold it. I didn't hold it very long. I didn't really care to, you know, pay for it. It was broken.
Exactly.
But a splendid young man. If you get a chance to go see him, I don't know how old he is, but I don't think he's seen 30 yet. But just an amazing talent, and not at all a prima donna.
He seemed very down to earth.
Very down to earth, and a lot of fun. I have not seen him perform in public, but I had a wonderful interview with him, and I enjoyed that a great deal.
You know, Jim, you do great interviews. You've got so many people plugged into you, and, you know, every night. And, you know, we do every day during the week doing interviews, and now I've started doing some interviews in my morning show. And it's a lot of work to have all these interviews and be prepared to talk to people.
Oh, it is that. Yeah, it's a lot of people look at what we do, Ann, and they say, well, that's not hard.
Yeah.
And that's a partial sentence. It's partially complete. It's not hard to do that in a so-so way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to do that subpar. It is rather hard to do it well, in my view. And do it every day. Clearly, preparation is very vital. It's amazing. The number of hosts, and I'm talking here about hosts in big cities or even at the network level, who go on the air, and if you're listening carefully, it becomes clear after maybe 5 minutes that this person really doesn't know that much about the subject, that this person has done no special preparation for this show. This person has not looked at a particular angle, for example, of a story, and plotted out the direction that they want to take the show. Like we talked about to Angelina Jolie the other night. And my question was, would you do that? If you're a woman, or if a man, and I said, let's try to offer something that is perhaps of comparable importance to an individual. Let's say a man had testicular cancer, or beyond that, not the cancer, but a gene which said they have an 87% chance of getting the cancer. Would you preemptively undergo that surgery? And my answer was no, emphatically not. I said, if I had to have PSA tests, let's say, and a digital exam every day before I undergo that surgery. And while I said, you know, I admire her courage, she thought this was the thing to do, and I know it was prompted in large part by watching her mother take a decade to die very painfully and very young.
Yes.
Beyond that, I said, I don't see doing it. I wasn't there. I didn't have all the options presented to me. But I noted that any kind of surgery includes some risk.
Sure.
I mean, granted, the surgery that she underwent, not rocket science surgery, as surgery goes, but still, I would have, that would have been my absolute last resort. And we talked about that, and it was, but that's that. That was an approach to the subject.
Sure.
Not just Angelina Jolie, what do you think?
Right.
But would you do that? Or let's say that you had a daughter or a son in a similar genetic circumstance. Would you do that? And beyond that, let's say that we reach the point, and this has got to be close, when you can take a young man and a young woman who are thinking about getting married, and you can do the old test in what would your offspring have?
Right.
Let's say that the test comes back and it says, well, you're healthy and you're healthy. Together, your offspring has an 87% chance of developing cancer. Would you proceed with the marriage? Would you proceed with a childless marriage? Would you proceed with a marriage and just keep a sharp eye on the kids? How would that affect your planning? And my point here is not to talk about reproduction or cancer, but this is how you prepare a show.
Sure. You've got to have a point of view.
A lot of people don't bother. And, yeah, you've got to do preparation.
Absolutely. And it takes a lot more time than I think most people think that it does to be prepared.
Yeah, as I say, anybody can do a talk show poorly, but you cannot necessarily do it well unless you just apply a lot of preparation to it. Because you see, people look at what we do. Very few people would take out their own appendix or the appendix of their spouse or their child. Very few people would try to represent themselves in a court of law. But be a talk show host? Oh, stand back. I can handle that.
That's right.
Different people can. And I'll grant you that you don't need 3 or 4 years of college to do this. But you do have to have a certain mindset and you have to have a willingness to prepare. And it doesn't hurt if you're also on the glib side,
right?
That you can put two or three or four or five words together in a row without tripping over yourself. So there are some skills involved in this, but people look at what you and I do and they say, oh, well, anybody can do that.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Well, Jim, you know, it's been 30 years that you've been a syndicated host.
Yes. Hard to believe, but in fact, just last month, April,
right,
marked 30 years in syndication. Well, I worked for the old Mutual Broadcasting System, which became Westwood One, which became Dial Global. I've been through three company names. That's how long I've been doing this.
And you must be doing a good job because you're always there.
Well, I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. I mean, it's a wonderful job. There's no boredom to this job. If you get bored doing this job, then you have a problem, a personal problem. I get to show up every day, talk about interesting subjects with interesting people. And here's another thing. The expectations of me are very low.
Jim.
I'll explain.
All right.
I spend 15 hours a week every night, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., Monday through Friday, talking with people who, in almost every case, know more about the subject than I do, usually far more. Occasionally, you'll get a broadcaster on, and I may have roughly comparable knowledge. But for the most part, I know hardly anything. So if I say anything that is remotely intelligent, I get big bonus points for that. That's not bad to have. Low expectations. Secret to happiness, Ann Eller, I'm telling you.
Lowered expectations.
That's right.
That's right. There was a dating service called that. Lowered
expectations. Well, that was a little joke on the Fox Mad TV show. but aside from the joke, there's a certain amount of truth in that as well. If the Olympics only require that you can high jump 6 inches, hey, then we're all gold medalists.
That's right. Wouldn't we all like to be that? But, you know, how did you end up in this slot? I know we've heard this story before, but there may be people out there that haven't, and it's a great story.
Well, I owe it all to a mechanic who left a wrench in a rocket at Cape Canaveral.
Now, come on. How did that come together?
How did that come about? Well, it came about in the following way. The company for which I worked when I was in Chicago at a local station, Mutual Broadcasting, I was at their local station, not at the network. They hired a guy named Larry King.
Just a little underrated guy.
You probably heard about him. Well, anyway, he brought his show to Chicago one time and did the show from the lobby of the local Hyatt Hotel, and they borrowed one of our engineers from the local station, WCFL. The engineer, Pat Keene was his name. I later found out he spent the whole night during the breaks telling Larry what a great guy I was. And I thought, well, that's nice. Thanks a lot, Pat. Appreciate it. This was in early of 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in November of 1981, Larry had to be off to give a speech. And at the time, his backup was a guy named Jim Slade, who was our space correspondent, later went on to work for ABC Television in that same role. And there was not a problem. Jim was going to cover this launch at Cape Canaveral. Then the next night, he was going to fill in for Larry. Well, the mechanic left the wrench in the rocket. The launch was postponed. Jim Slade was stuck at Cape Canaveral, and Mutual Radio realized they didn't have any bench strength. And that's when somebody said, "What about this guy Bohannon in Chicago?" That is why I am here today, Ann Eller. You would never have heard of me, and unfortunately, I would never have heard of you. And if I could ever meet this mechanic, I'd buy him a drink. That's how I'm here.
Well, that's right. Because so then you started filling
up in. A rocket line.
And then you started filling in, and then
I became his permanent host. Larry was on the nighttime radio scene for 15 years, mm-hmm. and I was his backup for 11 of those 15 years. And now I've had the show over 20 myself.
Wow. So huge, huge. And, of course, you're getting ready to get the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Tim?
Oh, well, I guess it means I can die now. I mean,
you've done it all.
I checked my birth certificate. There's no expiration date, so I don't know.
Awesome.
I do know. It is awesome. Talkers Magazine is presenting me with this. It's only the second one they've done, and the other one was Barry Farber, one of the most legendary members of the talk show fraternity. So I'm in exceedingly good company. And I'm looking forward to it, as I've told you before, and tell anybody who will ask about me retiring, no. You can have this microphone when you pry it from my cold, dead hands, to paraphrase the NRA. So, no, I'm not going anywhere, but they have decided that at least this much of my lifetime is worth achievement. So,
congratulations,
from this
Jim Bohannon.
Point on, I'm just going to coast.
I doubt that. You put together a good show, and then, of course, your morning show from 6 to 7,
exactly,
I like to say.
Eric in the morning.
Go to bed with him and get up with him in the morning.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Well, here we are with the one and only Jim Bohannon. You know, this is supposed to be Trash to Treasures Along a Country Road. And
the trash, and the Sharp Facets has all the treasures out there.
God, I thought I'd be the treasure, but anyways.
You're the treasure, Ann. You're not available. The jewelry is.
All right, good comeback. Good comeback there, Jim. Hey, let's just tell a quick since we're going towards the top of the hour,
okay.
We have a few minutes.
Sure.
How about a story about Reba McEntire, since that was our featured artist today?
Oh, yeah. I was listening to her and enjoying that. There's some selections I had never, in fact, heard before. Reba, one year, was one of the presenters at the Radio Hall of Fame. I am fortunate to be a member of that body, and I've also been the announcer every year about 15, 16 years, actually 17 years, I guess, this year. And we have people who are inducted, mm-hmm. and then we have people who induct them. And I'm trying to think of the guy, the legendary announcer from Nashville. His name escapes me for some reason at this moment. But anyway, among the people he discovered was this unknown named Reba McEntire. So she came to induct him, a lovely lady, red hair, and just a delightful woman. And to introduce her, I actually went out into Chicago and I found a costume store and I bought a Raggedy Ann wig and I introduced her wearing that wig. She was a great sport about that, I might add.
Yeah.
But I didn't have that chance to get to introduce her. And as I say, I was very impressed with her. I never got a big hug from her. I got that from Loretta Lynn. And I will always cherish that moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was nice.
Well, that's great. You know, it's hard to believe that Reba McEntire actually got discovered singing the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, that's a hard song to sing and to get discovered.
It's a hard song to sing, but it only goes to prove, and it wasn't under surroundings. It wasn't like it was an audition in a studio.
No. It was at a rodeo.
You just never know moments. You've always got to be at your best. You never know who is listening, watching, or taking in whatever it is that you do. Exactly. I've interviewed her sister as well. I want to say Luckinbill. Is that the name? I forget.
I don't know.
I forget the name now, but I've interviewed her sister, and I've interviewed Reba herself. But she's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And Dolly Parton is another one of the
country
queens.
Of your favorites, I know.
I've always enjoyed interviewing Dolly. I've done that several times.
What can you tell us a good story about Dolly?
Oh, she is a very, very quick person. I mean, she's I'm sure that writers help her on occasion, but she is a very quick study on her feet. I remember the time when Johnny Carson asked her, you know, if she ever gets upset about blonde jokes. She says, no, I know I'm not dumb, and I know I'm not blonde.
Well, there you go. That's a good line right there. Yeah. So, but, you know, over the years, you know, gosh, you've spent 30-some years. Has there ever been an interview that just totally stumped you? You just didn't know how to approach it? And then it turned out okay. But, you know, when you were trying to prepare for it, you were just going, I don't know what I'm going to do with this one.
Well, Dr. Edward Teller, who was the person who invented the hydrogen bomb, and all I wanted him to do was reduce the level of what it takes to make one down to the ordinary people. I wasn't looking for a how-to manual for terrorists, but just explain to us
right. How
you take something like hydrogen and mash it together and make this huge kaboom.
Right.
Well, I had been told he was a difficult interview, and the people who warned me understated the case. He was a very difficult interview. Did not want to climb down off his abstraction ladder and talk to ordinary people. He wanted to talk to people with PhDs in physics. And I was having a tough time with him. Now, I had been told beforehand, whatever you do, don't call him the father of the H-bomb. He hates that title. So I'm like 8-10 minutes into this, and it's not really going anywhere very well. And I decide that I have nothing to lose, so let's see if we can get his attention. So I said, Dr. Teller, is it true that every June the H-bomb sends you a Father's Day card? Well, that got his attention.
Yes.
But actually, once I did that,
you broke through.
He opened up a bit more, and we did actually learn a little bit about what it was that he actually did. So sometimes you have to get their attention. If that takes a 2x4 across the eyes, then so be it.
Absolutely. Now, you know, one of the parts of your show is you take questions from your listeners.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of a dangerous part of the business, isn't it?
Well, I play with a net. I have a delay.
Right.
And so that helps. But it's not as much dangerous. It would be if you didn't have a delay and stations could get fined hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I've got 500 stations. So, but with the delay, why, you're on pretty safe grounds. And plus, most people realize now that you can't even make a dent in the station. Used to be we had what were called tape delays. And,
right.
And if somebody said something bad, well, you hit the bleep button, and 7 seconds later there was this pause of dead air on the radio. Well, I got their attention. You can hear it. See, I'm the one that caused that. Today, these digital delays actually stretch out your syllables and fill the gap.
So you don't
even
notice.
You can curse on the air and you can't even tell. But I'll tell you, the most fun time, I guess, that I ever used the bleep button was not on a caller. It was on a guest.
On a guest?
J.R. Ewing, Larry Hagman was the guest on the
show.
Oh,
my goodness.
He was, by the way, a delightful little leprechaun of a man with big old bushy eyebrows and just a lot of fun. And I was having a good time interviewing Larry, and at one point something came up about, I forget what, it doesn't matter, but referring to some people who had an opposing view to his. And he said, well, bleep them. And I go, ah! And I hit the button. And I don't think he quite got what it was that he had done. But you know, bleep him is not what we ordinarily say on the radio there, Larry. So I did have to, on that occasion, bleep a guest. But Larry Hagman I just found to be a delightful person. I really did. I enjoyed him immensely. I'm sorry to see him having passed away.
Well, you know, his role as J.R. Ewing certainly carried for the rest. Was he like J.R. Ewing? Not nearly as sinister.
For one thing, well, I'm a big person, so a lot of people look small to me, but I always had J.R. Ewing pegged as a bigger guy, and Larry's
right.
Not that tall, really. And to me, he was much more like a leprechaun.
A leprechaun?
J.R., of course, was this sinister character who had that nice, easy Texas drawl, but behind it, you knew, stood utter ruthlessness. Whereas Larry Hagman just comes across as, hey, I'm a fun guy. And if you don't like it, well, bleep you or something. I don't know. I know he obviously had a serious side, but he was very just fun. You couldn't not like Larry Hagman during that interview. You just couldn't.
Well, that's terrific. Yeah. As you think back over the last 30 years, any other big ones that would be good to talk about right now?
Oh, I remember Carol Channing being on the show, and she had come from a performance at the Kennedy Center, and it was really a tight scheduling, so she left in costume and with makeup. And she gave me a big old hug, and I somewhere still have a shirt that has her makeup on that shirt. It has never been laundered or cleaned.
Well, hello, darling.
Hello, darling. Oh. what a larger-than-life person that she is. I was very taken with her. George Foreman, the boxer.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun with him. And George, I said, these days you're such a happy-go-lucky kind of guy, and laughing and shucking and jiving and selling grills and all. But I said, when you were in the prime of your boxing career, you had this sour, dour expression. And I said, which is the real you? And he said, this one today is. But when you're growing up on the mean streets of Houston, you better not walk around with a smile on your face. So I always had to walk around looking like I was really mean. Because that was never me.
Well, you know, you have to look at all the great people. I look at how privileged I am to interview people from all over and get to meet so many people. It just really is an awesome ability to be in this business and to be able to have the opportunity to speak with people. But I also think it's a responsibility, because you've got to ask the questions that everybody listening out there wants to know.
Yeah, you do. You always have to try and put yourself in the position of the audience. What would they like to hear? And that means that sometimes you have to ask the embarrassing question.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid to do so. You go where you have to go. That's the nature of the beast. You're not there to suck up to people and see if they'll autograph their book for you. You're there to ask the questions people want to hear. You don't always have to be rude about it. I've found that rarely is that necessary.
Exactly.
But you need to ask in some way.
You're absolutely right. Who haven't you interviewed that you still want to interview?
A sitting president. I've interviewed former presidents, but never a sitting president. The Pope would be interesting.
What do you think about our new Pope?
Well, I haven't followed him that much, not being Catholic, but it'll be interesting to see how he does. He seems to be very much a traditionalist, and therefore
very down to earth.
To fly in the face, perhaps, of some of the reform movements in the Catholic Church. I know that he personally called back to Buenos Aires to cancel his newspaper subscription. Honest to goodness, he called back and the subscription for Cardinal, whatever his name is. Oh, you can cancel that. I've moved. Like the owner of the newspaper service hadn't heard.
Yes, you know? Exactly. But they might not cancel the service.
Yeah, that's true. But he personally called to cancel his newspaper subscription back in Buenos Aires. I thought that was kind of cool.
That is cool. Well, you know, it really, as always, is a treasure to have you here on the show with us.
And you are a treasure, Ann Eller.
Well, thank you very much, Jim Bohannon. And I certainly hope, when do you have to go back?
Well, we're going to be heading back to the Beltway tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yeah. So I guess Monday night you'll be back in studio.
I'll be back in studio Monday morning. In studio from 6 till 7 a.m. right here on 1450 WCRS.
You are absolutely right. Well, you'll be coming in loud and clear all over Greenwood. And this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Jim Bohannon, thank you so much for stopping by and spending some time with me right here on the radio.
Thank you, Ann.
All right, that's going to do it for us. This is WCRS. Bye-bye, everybody. Oh, First Class Gospel coming up in just a few minutes.